everyone. How lovely to be here and to be with you all. Internalizing the mind, putting it at the heart center, and seeing there a golden light. You can see through feeling, and in the astral realms you can hear through feeling as well. In fact, all of the senses are interchangeable. So whether seeing or hearing or feeling is strongest in you, see and feel that golden light, a warm radiance that pulsates within the heart itself, that is at the center of your chest. Not where the physical heart is, but where the astral heart, the spiritual heart is. Then feel that warm radiance moving throughout your body, bringing with it a healing calm, a light, a feeling of well-being, of being at ease. Feel all your body cells bathed in that warm, golden light. Then see and feel that light extend beyond your physical limits into the electromagnetic field around you, the auric field. And feel it going out and surrounding you, bringing strength, bringing comfort. In that field around you, you have every right to. That is what in common parlance is called your space. And feel that that light is extending out throughout that electromagnetic field. And making you feel totally comfortable being here, totally comfortable being in this world. And then to go on expanding that light until it goes out and fills out this entire room and all the people in it. And feel that light bringing a healing calm and strength and purity. That the floor, the walls, the ceiling, the air becomes vibrant with that spiritual light. And you expand with it. And then continue to expand out that light, out and out, until you can encompass this entire world. And you see this world as a bubble floating in the sea of space. And the bubble is filled with that golden light. And it brings with it peace. It heralds the birth of a new era, an era of peace, an era of harmony, an era in which all mankind sees one another as brothers and sisters, fathers and mothers, daughters and sons. No longer do they look out onto a world of diversity. Rather, they see the underlying unity of spirit, of that golden light pervading everything that is. And that there is a celestial music that vibrates out with that light. And to all those who are attuned, they hear that celestial music. They feel its vibration. their awakening as if to a new day. And there's a smile in their hearts, and it spreads out over their faces. Let peace and love and joy rise up and expand and become the hallmark of what it is to be human. It all begins with you. And now, if you'll pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king, reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Reading from the Gospel of Swami Ramdas, Swami Satchidananda. Papa then told them the gist of a conversation and continued, Ramdas was praying to Ram, or God, that he must have so much power and radiance that those who came before him must get spiritually illumined. Mother Hamilton, I feel that already when I sit before you. Papa, see, your face is so radiant and full of joy. Your eyes, how bright they are. Mother Hamilton then took some typed sheets of paper from her table and said, this is what I noted down when Swami Satchidananda could not be with us one afternoon, and when you said the most wonderful things. I wanted to give them to Swamiji for his record. She then read out the typed matter containing Papa's talk with her on 5th November. I had asked Papa about the various states of samadhi, and from that subject he went on to talk about the various sadhanas necessary in order to have complete self-realization, stressing the need for spiritual aspirant to be quiet and alone at times so that he might meditate uninterruptedly upon God. As he went on talking about the various practices and the stages one goes through in order to attain, I tried to determine, after thinking over the events of my own busy life and the fact that I had had but very little opportunity to do any of the things which he said were necessary, just what my actual state of development was. So I said, Papa, I have never had the opportunity to do any of the things you have said. Yet in spite of the fact that I could seldom sit in meditation, the bliss of God has filled me so greatly that I have been almost helpless in it. Will you please tell me what state of development I am in? How can mere words describe the radiance which appeared on his face, the wistfulness and the look of ineffable love and tenderness? In that pause that followed, he put his hands together as he does when he is filled to overflowing with bliss, and said like a small, shy boy, Ramdas can only tell you that you are his Divine Mother. He sees you as the very embodiment of God's light. You are a shining being, spreading your love, light, and bliss on all. For a moment, the whole world stood still as I got the full impact of his words and of the spirit within him, realizing that here from the lips of God himself was a verification of what he had told me when I was in samadhi. In the suspended state in which I found my consciousness, it seemed as though this was at once both my destiny and its fulfillment. When finally I could speak, I said, I feel that I have attained God, but the terrible way of the cross over which I have come remains in my consciousness and makes me doubt. God has revealed to me the inner truth about much of the scriptures. What about the rest of them? Do I not still have to receive that? And he replied, Forget the scriptures. You have risen far above them. It is not necessary for you to follow the practices laid down for others. The scriptures are only for the benefit and guidance of those who are still on the path. Let the love of God overflow within your being to enlighten others. He will use you to give his truth, his wisdom, and his love to all with whom you come in contact. I said, You mean he will supply the rest of the knowledge of the scriptures as they are needed? He answered, God's grace has come to you through your guru. He is working through you to do many things. That morning my husband had expressed doubt about his own ability to realize God, and I had assured him he would. However, to verify my own feeling about it, and also for his satisfaction, I said, Papa, Father doesn't believe you will receive full enlightenment, and I have told him that he will. Is this not true? He answered, Yes, it is true. Then looking at him, he said, How could it be otherwise when you have come here so humbly, so sincerely, and with such a pure heart? Then he added, You should be very happy to have such a wife. And then with just a breath of a pause, he turned and said to me, You should also be very happy to have such a husband. We both assured him that such was our feeling, and he beamed at us with joy. Each precious moment spent in Prabhupada's presence is like a gift from heaven. But today, because of the words that were spoken, it seemed as though God, through his infinite love and mercy, graciously stooped down and, like a little child, offered me the gift of himself. She finished reading, placed the typed notes back on the table, and said, Now I want to ask you a question. Father, Ralph, says that Papa sees all women as the Divine Mother, and that there is nothing special if he says so in my case. What do you say about it? Papa laughed and kept quiet for a few minutes. He looked at Ralph, then at Mildred, at Karanj Gokar, and then Swami Satchidananda. Then he looked down smiling. All the while, others were eagerly waiting for him to speak, wondering what his answer would be. They were not kept in suspense for long. Papa raised his head. His face broadened into a smile. He said he, Ralph, is right in a way. All of you are God. Ram Dass looks upon all women as forms of the Universal Mother. But when you, turning to Mildred, asked the question, the reply was suitable for the occasion. When Ram Dass looks at others, he does not see merely their exterior. He sees deep within them all the divine spirit, God. By doing so alone, Ram Dass can awaken God in others. That is, seeing God in God. That is, God seeing God. That is the truth. Ram Dass knows that it is God only who has assumed all these forms in the universe. He is the guru, and he himself is the disciple. As a disciple, he pretends that he is ignorant and asks to be guided by the guru. As a guru, he pretends that he is realized and guides the disciple. The whole world is a pretense. We must see him alone in all forms. Some friends come and ask Ram Dass whether they are progressing or not. As Ram Dass has already told you, he does not see the exterior of these persons. He sees them as God. So he tells them, "You are He. Why do you pretend that you have not attained anything? Give up the pretense." It is not that Ram Dass cannot understand or gauge the progress of the devotees. It is possible. But he does not tell them, because there is great danger in doing so. If he tells them that they have advanced, they become proud, and pride goes before a fall. If he tells them that they are not, they feel dejected, and even give up their efforts to realize him. In either case, there is danger. Ram Dass is like a mirror. All saints are. You see in him your own reflection. Whatever answers he gives are words put in his mouth by yourself, because it is you who make him talk. If you come before him with an open mind, revealing the self in you, you will see the self in Ram Dass. When you put a question to Ram Dass, you are, for the time being, raised to that level, and therefore that reply comes from Ram Dass. Mother Hamilton, Father, it still feels that the ego in me has not been crucified. Papa, others' opinions about us need not always be correct. Nobody can understand another. God alone can understand us. We cannot understand saints from what they talk or do. We must know them only from what they are. Only God can know them. You must, both of you, become spiritual dynamos. You must be able to radiate peace and joy wherever you go in America and lead people on the path of God. Ralph, but when are we to get started? Papa, it has already started, even from Seattle. Ralph, I do not feel so. Papa, feel it or not, it is there. Whenever Ram Dass gets an occasion, he tells Mataji the gist of our conversations. Yesterday, Ram Dass told her that both of you are happy here and are getting the expected benefit. She was writing Ram Nam. She suddenly stopped writing and told Ram Dass, "It is very good. Please see that they are fully satisfied and return home with the fullest spiritual experience and all doubts cleared." See how anxious she is. Even when she is looking after your material comforts carefully, her heart is on your spiritual progress. Mother Hamilton, yes, Papa, I can feel it. I love her so much that I know I am one with her. Krishna Iyer, who was present during the talks the other day, came here the morning after and said he wanted to worship the Divine Mother. He then prostrated before me, falling flat on the ground, when a spiritual vibration ran through my body with wonderful effect. I ask him to worship God in himself and not anybody outside. I thought this evening I would speak on Mother because her birth date is on Christmas Day, December 25th. She was born in the year of 1904. She was one of seven children to survive. And as she described about her own parents, that she felt that she was on the head of a pin, that is, she was watched with extreme care and caution because all these other children had died. They are very cautious about her safety. She was not allowed to leave the yard. Oftentimes, she was not allowed to play with other children. So she led such a life. And throughout her growing up time, she went through many difficult experiences. They did not have much money as a family. Her father was an alcoholic, and she said that she could watch him walking down the sidewalk when he was coming home. And if he was swerving from side to side, as a young girl, just a toddler, she would go inside to stand between her mother and her father because he knew that her father could be physically abusive. And so she would stand there to protect her mother with all of her will and with all of her might, just this tiny little child. But if he is walking straight, then it was all right, and she would go on playing out in the yard. She described one time getting into a car. Now, she had never driven a car before, but it was a friend of hers, father's. It was his car. And she got in the car, and somehow she got it started. And without really knowing how to drive it, she got the clutch in, and she put it into gear. Perhaps she had watched others drive. And off she went with her girlfriend, who was terrified that mother was doing all of this. And mother ran down the road, and fortunately no one was hurt, but she ran into a porch. The porch collapsed on top of them, and fortunately they were all right. But you can imagine how much trouble she was in. But she was mischievous like that. She was always looking for adventure. She was always looking to stretch the bounds. And when she was but still a young teenager, she decided to leave the Catholic Church. She had been raised Catholic. Both of her parents were so. And to do so was a very large thing in her family. Neither parent were in favor of this. But she didn't feel satisfied with the truth that she was being taught there. She grew up being afraid of God and of God's punishment and all the imagined sins that she must have committed in order to get sent to purgatory or into hell itself. And yet she felt deep in herself that there must be something more, something greater than what she was being given. And so she left that church, and she struck out wanting to know the truth. So she read various books, and she got inspired that there must be something more than what she had been taught. And one day, a man who came in to do the books where she was working told her that a Swami Yogananda was coming to town and eventually convinced her to come. And when she did, she was absolutely transfixed by him. It changed her life, never to be the same again. And so she went on, and she was married, and she had three children. Her husband had no arms just before she was to be married. He was in an electrical accident. He was an electrician. And he lost both of his arms. They were amputated from just below the elbows. And so he couldn't feed himself, he couldn't clothe himself, she had to do everything, and she had to work. And her friends warned her, don't marry him, he can't support you. And yet she decided to go ahead and do it, that it was the right thing to do. And so they proceeded to have children. And finally, after three children, the doctor threatened to tie her tubes if she didn't stop having children, because he knew what their financial condition was, and he knew that they couldn't afford it. And yet she was such a mother at heart that she wanted to have more. And so it felt like a great sacrifice to her not to have any more children. And so this is the way it all went in a human kind of a sense. But after meeting her guru, she felt completely and totally focused on him. And when difficulties came in, he lived down in Los Angeles and he in Seattle, and at that time it wasn't so easy to travel between cities, and she had no money. So she was not able to travel, and once in a while he came up to the Seattle or Tacoma area. And he gave classes there, and she took Kriya from him. And she felt absolutely devoted to him. And her father, who was Iroquois Indian, said to her one time, you'd follow that old Indian anywhere, referring to Yogananda. And she said, yes, I would. And this is how she felt about him. And she was one time diagnosed with tuberculosis. Now, TB was a serious illness at that time. And there were people who were quarantined. There were people who died, many who died because of this disease. And she had two spots on her lungs, the size of quarters each. And so she didn't know what to do. She sent a telegram down to Master. And she described to him what the condition was. And he sent back and said that he would pray for her. The next week when she went in and they took more x-rays, they couldn't find any sign of the tuberculosis at all. He had healed her completely from such a great distance. And another time she had an ovarian cyst the size of a goose egg. And they were worried that if it burst, that it would kill her. And it was difficult to operate on it without creating other damage. So once again, she sent down a telegram to Master. And he wrote back a reply that he was praying for her. And once again, when she went in, they took x-rays and they couldn't find any sign at all of that cyst. It was completely gone, vanished. And so she would say, Master saved my life not once but many times. But as much of it was a long-distance relationship. And she was busy raising her children and working. She was the sole provider for the house. And then she would come home and she would feed her husband and her children. She would do laundry. She would do everything till well past midnight, and then finally she would collapse. And in the morning she would get up and she'd do it all over again. And this was during the Depression years. And there were many years when she had but one coat, one dress, one pair of stockings, one pair of shoes. That's all that she had. And she would pray for prosperity. And then somebody would give her some hand-me-down clothes. And she would somewhat complainingly tell God, well, I asked for prosperity and you provided it, but I was really thinking that you might give me some money so I could go to the store and buy something of my own choosing. But she was nevertheless grateful for what came to her anyway. And so she went through all of these years and all of these experiences, and they were very, very difficult. But she had great love for her children, and she first began to be called mother by her children's friends who came over, and she would serve them cookies and milk and whatever they might have. And they loved being there, and they all began to refer to her as mother, as if she were their very own mother. And so as she grew older, eventually she became remarried again. And her second husband was Ralph. And he is a very great spiritual individual of his own right. And Master passed away. And when Master passed away, she was absolutely devastated. But when she went down to Mount Washington, where his body was, they were waiting for some people to come from India. And it turned out in the end they weren't able to get visas and they weren't able to come. But for over 20 days they kept him, and she went down and she meditated at his feet. He was laid out on a bed and she spent the entire night there. And as the sun was starting to come up, she decided that she would give way, and if there was others who wanted to come and meditate, that she would give up her chair there. She bowed down to his feet and touched her forehead to his feet. And there, from this body that had been long dead, although it had not decomposed at all, it was quoted in the annals of the mortuary there that it was the only case they had ever known about where there had not been any decay at all. But when she bowed over and touched her forehead to his feet, she felt an electric shock go out from his body into her own. And she had prayed to Master that anything that she could do for him and for his work, she was willing to do. And this was his reply, to have this tremendous life force shock go throughout her entire being. Her prayer was heard, and it was answered. And so when she met Papa, excuse me, a couple years later, She recognized this was a fully realized being. Now, fully realized masters are rare in this world. There are many who have gained a certain amount of realization and been lifted up into the divine consciousness, but they're not yet fully realized, which means that the divine light and life now imbues that spiritual master from head to foot. There's nothing that's separate from the God that they worship. And Papa and Master were two fully realized beings. And so Mother would say that she is the product of not one, but two fully realized beings. And when she met him, she knew that it was her destiny to get her complete and full realization by going to Papa. He invited her to come to India. And this is what I've been reading from you this evening. It's a description by Swami Satchidananda of some of the conversations between the two of them. And they're wonderful. They're wonderful. It's wonderful to have a record of this. And Swami Satchidananda had said to me that Mother was unique in coming to the ashram. First of all, that she was just absolutely dedicated to the purpose of getting her own realization. And that Papa treated her differently. The dialogue was different between them than anybody else. And when Mother asked whether she would get her full realization, Papa answered in the affirmative. And to his knowledge, this is the only time that Papa ever did that. Many asked. But only in Mother's case was it answered in this way, so directly. And through the experiences that Mother went through at this time, and later, as she came back to America, she went through the mystical crucifixion. She referred to the scriptures and the revelations that God was giving her about the scriptures. And these were the Christian scriptures. And what she was getting was a revelation about how everything that she was going through these internal spiritual experiences, were actually being written about in symbolic form within these Christian scriptures, that the life and description of the life of Jesus was full of symbology. And that through these symbolic meanings was a description, really, of what every one of us goes through in our ascent from the human into the divine. And it's powerful. And they were powerful to her, and they came as something brand new. When the Joseph and Mary, the mother and father of Jesus, are spoken about, what was revealed to Mother was that these symbolize the pineal and the pituitary glands. And the reason that it is a virginal birth is that these two glands never come together, but they have secretions that go out from them. And from these secretions, a Christ seed is formed. And so the whole thing, Bethlehem, means the house of bread. And when the star is seen at the Ajna, the third eye point, it shines over this Christ seed that now resides behind the stomach in a part of the anatomy there. Now some of this is physical and some of it is superphysical. And then this seed, then the Herod comes up, and Herod represents the passions, and he tries to expel that seed. He cuts off all the heads of the children, but the Christ seed escapes. And so the passions come up and try to expel through sexual activity at that time. Now this is a very special time that is being gone through. And if that energy is held, then that seed travels down to Egypt. And Egypt is the base of the spine. And then it travels the way of Galilee, the way of the circuit, and it goes up the spine. And there's a baptism in the River Jordan, and the River Jordan is the river right within your own spine. It is the river of life force that flows within you. And it purifies you when this river opens up and washes through you, and it washes away all the debris, all the dirt, all the difficulties, all the darkness, all the ignorance that you've had in this lifetime and others. And so this whole thing happens right inside of you. And it's a fantastic story. It totally changes our understanding of these scriptures. That there may have been a tremendous spiritual master named Jesus, there is no doubt that a tremendous avatar, one who descended from spirit into flesh, a perfected one, came into this world and created these scriptures. Now, whether he lived through every single one of these circumstances or not is not at all known. Only one of the scriptures talks about Herod killing all of the children. And yet you would think that this was a significant event and that all four of the Gospels would have that in it, but they don't. And Josephus, who was a historian at the time and talked about many of Herod's misdeeds, never mentioned that. The killing of all the children in one town, you'd think that that might be worth noting. But it's not there. Now, does that discount the Bible or the scriptures or mean that it's untrue? And the answer is no. That these stories, sometimes historical and sometimes not, carry tremendous significance for you and me. They describe what happens inside of us. They describe the inner potential that we all have of bringing Christ's selves. That in the first of John, it says, to all them who believed on him, gave he power to become sons of God. Now, the Son of Man inside of you is the human self, the human ego. That is the Son of Man. And the Son of God within you is that pure, spiritually perfected self. And it already exists in you, only it is unknown to you in a conscious kind of a way. Perhaps you have gotten glimpses of it, and you know it in part. And as St. Paul says, in the beginning, you see as through a glass darkly, and then as through clear glass. And the glass darkly is the veil of ignorance that is within your own mind. And so you don't see that perfection that is residing inside of you. You don't see, as Papa said, the God that resides within you. And Papa felt that the best thing he could do for your own evolution is to see God inside of you. Excuse me. And when he saw God inside of you, beyond the mask, beyond the personality, that helped to awaken God who is innately within you. And he had many, many examples where people would come to him in anger, out of ignorance, out of selfishness, out of greed, and by his pure vision of seeing God within that individual, it would change them. And he would see a tremendous change. And he would not let go of that vision, no matter what kind of mask somebody threw at him. And some people abused him. Some people physically beat him. Some people ordered him around to this place and that. And he accepted it as all as God's command. And by seeing God within the individual who is doing it. And when he did that, the other individual couldn't stand up against that power and that light. And eventually they would come around and they would soften. And their hearts would open. They couldn't help it. One man said, "You see God everywhere?" Papa said, "Yes." He said, "Where? Where in this room? Where do you see God?" And Papa reached out his hand and patted him on the old man's heart. And he says, "Right here in this form." And the man just melted right there and then. He couldn't stand up against it. And so when we practice seeing God in one another, serving God in one another, loving God in one another, what a wonderful, wonderful thing that is. These Christian scriptures are not just about a man who lived 2,000 years ago or a promise of something to come in some vague future of a second coming. But the second coming is here and now. It happens right within you. When in deep meditation you look and you see nothing but darkness, and then suddenly the clouds open up and you see a tremendous light and a tremendous being descending from the heavens within you into your very own self. It is not a being of a foreign nature. It is your very own God self that comes to you, blesses you, awakens you, brings you into the knowledge of who and what you are. Who and what you are is so tremendous, it is so beyond your own current understanding, that you would not be able to fully comprehend it or believe it in this moment. And yet I sit here to tell you that it is true, that the divinity that resides within you is absolutely true. It is reality. And it has always been, and it will always be, no matter what you do against it, no matter how far you go away from your knowledge of that divinity within yourself. Nevertheless, you are that. You are that. If God created everything, then how can you be anything else other than God's stuff? You must be. You must be. And yet we look at our own lives, we look within us, and we say, how can that be? I know who I am. I know what I have done. I know where I have been. How can this be God? And the answer is that God resides in you innately, but sometimes silently, subconsciously, hidden deep down under layers of ego nature. Nevertheless, that divinity resides within you, and it cannot be changed. It cannot be marred. It cannot be sullied. No matter what you do against humanity and yourself, you cannot change the course of that divine spark within you. That is the inner Christ within you. And Jesus came to awaken that Christ. That is the birth. And this is what Mother came to teach and to clarify through these Christian scriptures, that this thing happens all within you. And as this seed rises up through your spine, you go through many, many different experiences. But ultimately, you come into the realization and knowledge of your oneness with God. And what is it that is God? God represents the divine light and life that is omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent. And yet, and this is the greatest mystery of all, it resides right within us. The same power, the same intelligence that went into creating all of this vast universe, and it is a vast, tremendous creation, vast beyond human comprehension. And yet, the very same power and intelligence that created all of that resides right within you. That is what Christ means, the Anointed One. The one who is perfect and pure, the only begotten Son of God. And it resides right within you. It is the firstborn of every creature. That includes you. And it is in every atom of space. Only every atom of space may not fully comprehend it in the way that you might, because you are born with special faculties. You are born with the faculties of the heart center and the fifth chakra and the sixth and the seventh. And these allow you to experience and to know consciously the divine consciousness. You can know it in a way that dumb matter cannot. And yet it also allows us in our journey upwards to go against that divine nature as dumb matter cannot do. And so it is a two-edged sword. And we can do terrible, terrible things against one another. We can hurt each other. We can kill each other. We can be in total greed. We can have all of these things. And yet, the divine nature within us each cannot be destroyed. That is one thing we cannot do with human will, is destroy that perfect Son of God within you. And yet when we do these things against ourselves, we put layer upon layer over the top of that divine perfection, so that it becomes so obscured that we have no faith, we have no knowledge of that divine spark whatsoever. And it's not until we begin to turn the mind within, to internalize it, because it resides within us. And we have to go down through all these different layers that we ourselves have built. And we have to clear them aside until that divine nature stands revealed. And it is then that we know that it has always been there. It always will be there. But not until then. Before that time, we may suspect it. We may think it, but we don't know it in the same way. And so this is the full cycle of Christ's life. But at this time of year, we celebrate the birth of Mother and the birth of Christ. And indeed, in my mind, they are one and the same thing, because she was a Christ self. And everyone who rises to that Christ nature stands equal with the Christ. He has said so himself. You know, if you really look at these scriptures, he doesn't put himself apart. He proclaims his own divinity, but he also proclaims yours. And this is a fact that is little talked about in today's Christianity. But it has to come, doesn't it? There has to come a day when Christians of today will awaken to the fact that the eternal truths that initially spawned this tremendous religion really speaks about the awakening of the divine essence within each and every one of us. Now, we can't fool ourselves and just say, well, I meditate a little bit today, so I'm there. I've got it all. This is a journey that is tremendous. It is transforming. And Mother put herself completely into it. She gave herself to God and Guru. She gave herself completely. And God took it. And she went through many difficult circumstances, but she said what she went through, none of the rest of us would have to go through to the same degree that she did. Nevertheless, we have to be willing to do what is required in order for that transformation to occur. We have to willingly surrender ourselves. But you know, in our ego sense, we think we're going to lose something. We're going to lose control. We're going to lose happiness. We're going to lose whatever it is that we're holding on to or trying to hold on to. But the fact is, what is born inside of you is a tremendous treasure beyond description. And when you put the gifts of myrrh, now myrrh is the bitterness of life, and some people cling very tightly to the bitterness. They're sarcastic. They're doubtful. They don't want to believe in anything at all that is good and uplifting. And you have to be willing to surrender that at the feet of the Christ. And then the gold. It is the gold of this world. It is the gold of attachment. Those things that we try to hold on to in a material sense. And we have to surrender that as well to the Christ, at the Christ's feet. And then our devotion and our love for God. That is the incense. And we put that also at the feet of the Christ, even as the three wise men put the frankincense, incense, the myrrh, and the gold at the feet of the Christ. And when we're able to do that, and we see that star shining within ourselves, then we know that the birth is near. It is near. And it is coming. But this is really just the beginning of things. It is just the birth. But it is good. It is good. So in marking here Mother's birthday and Christmas, bound together forever. Symbolic of the birth of Christ in this world, we can honor the great soul that Mother was, that Mother is, by emulating her in every detail, by loving God, serving God, surrendering to God, keeping our mind on God. And you know what? God is fun. God is fun. Mother used to say that God is life and life is God. It is the human ego that separates it all out and says, well, if you go with God, you somehow separate yourself out of this world. It's not true. Because God is a part of everything that is. He's part of your relationships with your family, with your friends, with your recreation, with everything that you do. And when you make God a part of it, it adds fun, it adds purity, it adds joy, it adds light, it adds love to everything that you do. It does not subtract and take away from life. It only adds to your life. Now, when you surrender yourself completely, that inner divine life may say, do this and not that. But it is not trying to punish you or keep you away from anything. It is trying to lead you to your own highest good. And if you are wise and you listen to it, then you become like one of those wise men who follow the star. And then to observe the birth of the Christ within. So these are wonderful, wonderful mysteries. Some of them can be spoken and some of them cannot be. But all of them can be experienced. And all of them can be lived. And they can lead to the transformation and the birth of the Christ within you. I'd like to close with reading from Cross and the Lotus Journal. We have some new ones there here. And this is from a talk, transcription of a talk that Mother gave. The purpose of the teacher. How can we keep ourselves from this? That is, the realization of Christ. I don't understand, except that, as it says in the Bible, at first you see through a glass darkly, and then face to face. Because man can only go as fast as he can go. And that's another thing you recognize as a teacher. And you have sympathy, and you have understanding, and you have compassion, because the consciousness can only expand as it can expand. You can't push it beyond. You can hold out the inspiration. You can hold out the incentive. You can give it everything. But until it is ready to open its petals to the light of God, the Son of God, it is helpless in it. But that is the reason the teacher comes, to change that. To hold this light before you constantly, to have patience with your lack, your inability to grasp more than you can at the moment. And you cannot turn such a one away, because you come to that state of consciousness where no matter where you look, what form you see, there is God in all of His glory. And you see this other merely as a cloak, which is being worn by the human soul, which is God Himself in human form. And the love of God within you goes forth to all of His children in such a way that you could deny them no thing, no matter how great the sinner. You want to take them in your arms because you realize that it is only love that will change the world. Not hate, not judgment, not criticism, but love. To give of yourself in full measure. You can give of things. You can give of money. And these things must and should be given so that mankind can carry on, the work of God can carry on. But when you give of yourself, fully, your love, your effort in every way, when you give that to God, then you have arrived in the state which we are all put here to realize, the oneness with God, 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 nothing but God everywhere. It is my New Year's wish for for you that you will not forget Christmas, the birth of Christ, but you will water the seed of spiritual consciousness which was born within yourself, deep in the dark ages, and which is now ready to bear fruit. And that during this coming year, as has happened to quite a few this last year, you will come into greater consciousness of who and what you are, that the Christ child will grow to be a strong master of God, a servant of the Lord, letting God walk before you, leading you and lighting the way for you. Give of yourself with your heart. Stop judging. Stop criticizing. Go first within. Changing yourself, you will change thousands. These, I think, were some of the greatest words that my master ever said. Change yourself and you will change thousands. As I have found that as the change comes within myself, that he has brought me the outlook, more and more people are coming and I'm contacting more and more all the time. I feel the growth, the change within myself. I am not perfect in the human sense. I may do things, perhaps, but in the Spirit of God, that perfection is growing every day of my life. And I would not have it differently, because every single moment of my life I look within myself to see if there isn't some little thing that I can do to make myself a greater servant of God, because I am so totally surrendered to Him that, as I said, He is my beloved. He is my bridegroom. He is the one to whom I am married now. My marriage is with him, and I love it. I have not ceased to live, but rather I have learned to live in fullness of God. And I wish this for you, each and every one of you, that during this coming year, that you may find within yourself the growth of this Christ child. And this growth may take place in such a wondrous fashion that you may become, each and every one of you, masters under God, serving Him with all of your hearts, your minds, and your souls, in whatever field He has placed you. If you'll pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Soul coming. And so I would like ohms for her as well, healing ohms, and for this new little soul coming in. For perfect health, perfect delivery, everything going wonderfully. And to feel a glow of spiritual radiance within and all around. And that this soul who's coming in at this time may be a light that lights the way for others in whatever way God grants it and deems correct. So So let us send out 3 healing ohms for mother and child. Ooh.